Rock out of Stone Cold. The Hellraiser is back.
Here we go. Evolution of the Shield.
John Cena versus the Showstopper.
Hulk Hogan and The Rock in the same ring.
You will never take my place at the head of the table.
Undertaker with a Hellgate submission. Oh, my God. What?
My God, Michaels just kicked Cena's head off.
The Monday Night Wars have come to WrestleMania.
It'll be The Rock. It'll be Austin one-on-one.
Third and fourth, The Undertaker.
Do you believe in miracles?
The streak is over.
Hey, what's going on, guys? And welcome back to Rivalries on the WWE podcast on this Friday, November 12th, as we are just, I believe, 1 week away from Survivor Series. And I know I touched on it last week, but it's pretty much a damn shame about what this pay-per-view kind of has been dumbed down towards. And I mean, it's kind of telling of where WWE views Survivor Series on their, I guess, power, their internal power rankings of their own pay-per-views. And I would say now that it kind of plays, what is it, fifth or sixth fiddle behind, well, for one, I would say Crown Jewel has kind of become one of like the unofficial big four pay-per-views, unfortunately, or even a pay-per-view like Money in the Bank. And you know, I've said it numerous times, I thought that Survivor Series was always one of my favorite pay-per-views growing up, and as early as maybe even 5, 6, 7 years ago. You know, I remember the John Cena versus Authority match at Survivor Series 2014 that led to the debut of Sting for the first time ever in WWE. But enough about that. We're not here to talk about Survivor Series. We are here to talk about rivalries. And this year, this week, rather, we are going back to the March of 2004 for the Rock and Sock Connection against Evolution. And I've covered this briefly in the past before when I covered Mick Foley and Randy Orton about a year ago at this time. It was an early rivalry that I covered. And we glossed over the WrestleMania match between The Rock and Sock Connection going up against three members of Evolution in Batista, Ric Flair, and the Intercontinental Champion Randy Orton. But I think it's important to kind of do a deep dive on this particular rivalry that only really lasted about 2 weeks leading into WrestleMania, because it was very significant in a lot of ways on many different levels for several different opponents here. So obviously this was kind of a spin-off rivalry of Randy Orton versus Mick Foley. And this was them trying to build Randy Orton to be a main event level player. That's what this was all about. And you know what? In hindsight, they did a damn good job doing so. Because the year 2003, let's say from the summer on, was all about getting Randy Orton as fast as possible to an upper mid-card teetering on main event level guy. And upon his return to the company following his injury in early 2003, right after No Way Out, you had him kind of get the one-up on, let's say, Batista. Now, I do think that the plan was always for Randy Orton to be the young star coming out of the group, and Batista was just more the muscle, and I think there was a 10-year age difference between the two of them. But Randy Orton coming back first from injury and then really hitting the ground running was a testament to just how good he was. And you had him go up against Shawn Michaels at a few pay-per-views. I believe it was Unforgiven 2003 where he defeated Shawn Michaels. And then his big victory, albeit in a tag team match, came at Survivor Series 2003. And there you go, another instance of Survivor Series being a very, very important pay-per-view. So Survivor Series 2003, he was one of the members of Team Bischoff in the 5-on-5 match against Team Austin. And lo and behold, he was the final survivor who ended up eliminating Shawn Michaels, albeit with the help of Batista. But he was the guy who eventually scored the pinfall victory for Eric Bischoff, which resulted in Bischoff being the lone general manager of Monday Night Raw. And this kind of became a trend for several years for Randy Orton of being a lone survivor at Survivor Series to start his career. You saw it the following year where he had his team defeat Triple H's team, and that was a different year at Survivor Series where the matches were 4-on-4. So you had Orton, Benoit, Maven, and Jericho go up against Triple H, Batista, Edge, and Snitsky. And then the year after that, you had the Raw versus SmackDown match where you had Team SmackDown beat Team Raw. And once again, Randy Orton was the lone survivor in that instance for Team SmackDown. And if you guys remember correctly, that's when, while he was celebrating, The Undertaker made his return to the company after being out for, I think it was about a month and a half, when Orton set him on fire in the casket match at No Mercy in 2005. So this year, 2003, particularly towards the end, is what really catapulted Randy Orton into the main event. And in, well, not into the main event, but into the upper mid card. And at Armageddon 2003, he wins the Intercontinental Championship from Rob Van Dam, his first championship on the main roster. So you really have Randy Orton just firing his way up the ranks at this point, light years ahead of Batista, even I would say, maybe not light years, but well ahead of John Cena, who was over on SmackDown. And you could really kind of see things coming together that you knew sooner rather than later that this guy was going to be a world champion in WWE and that he was going to get there sooner rather than later. But one of the things that they use, or people rather, they use to fast-track Randy Orton's route to the main event scene was Mick Foley. And Mick Foley, who had kind of been not around in the background for several years in WWE, I think he had come back here and there for the Invasion angle. I remember him being a special guest referee at the Invasion pay-per-view. It had been, I would say, over 2 years since we saw Mick Foley back in any capacity in WWE. But in December, he was actually brought back as the co-GM of Monday Night Raw for just a few weeks in the absence of Stone Cold Steve Austin. But it led to several encounters with Orton and with Mick Foley, one of which resulted in Orton spitting in Foley's face. And this was when they really started pushing the Legend Killer gimmick, or the start of it, when he was taking out legends left, right, and center, RKOing Stacy Keibler, although I believe that came much later on. But Mick Foley was kind of like the birth of the Legend Killer gimmick. Without Mick Foley, I don't think the Legend Killer gimmick and era really even gets off the ground for Randy Orton. Foley was kind of the catalyst for that. But there's one particular instance at Madison Square Garden where Orton, Flair, and Batista really went to town on Mick Foley backstage. And this was one that kind of really set the stage for their rivalry.
There's a commercial break. This is appalling here. They're just trying to make a compliment. And then Sasha came out. But from behind came Randy Orton. Randy Orton doing the damage on Mick Foley. This all happened during the commercial break. And this was absolutely sickening and uncalled for. Mick Foley being honored tonight as a hardcore legend. So Randy Orton used that, well, that hardcore championship trophy on the back of Mick Foley's head. Look at Mick Foley. This is during the commercial break. Mick Foley's by all his worth and Randy Orton with another cheap shot.
He busted a bottle right in the head or the face of Foley.
Mick Foley getting a bottle busted in his face. But it wouldn't end there. Randy Orton trying to destroy.
For myself now,
absolutely dastardly. Randy Orton again hammering away at Mick Foley. And look at Mick Foley knocked all the way down the stairwell.
So this was actually in June of 2003, so I kind of made a mistake with the timeline. So they kind of stretched this out for 6 months before they picked it back up again. So this was a result of Mick Foley originally brawling with Ric Flair and then Randy Orton coming to Flair's defense and subsequently kicking him down a flight of stairs at I believe it was Madison Square Garden. So when Mick Foley came back onto relatively regular programming on Monday Night Raw in the winter of 2003 going into 2004, there had already been seeds that were planted. So you start getting these different run-ins with Mick Foley and Randy Orton. And in early February, you have Mick Foley challenging Randy Orton for a WrestleMania match on Monday Night Raw. But as was becoming the norm, it was never Foley versus Orton. It was always Foley fighting an uphill battle against numerous members from Evolution.
Where's catering? To the left.
Left.
You tell Randy Orton I'm on my way. Hey, Randy! I'm on my way!
I told you, JR, he's a madman. He's got a loose screw.
Catering.
Somebody's going to embarrass here. Mick Foley's going
to... Looking for Orton.
He's got a score to settle with Randy Orton. I can damn
you're
sure tell
here.
You
I'm right here, Randy. Showtime's now!
Oh, look, there he is!
I want a piece of you!
Wait,
you and me, baby, come on!
Oh, my God.
I knew it!
Oh, no!
Dad!
Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Where are Batista? The tag team champions! Playing in wait! This is nothing but a damn setup!
So Orton sets Foley up in catering and it results in a 3-on-1 beatdown and Foley getting barely powerbombed through a table in catering. And this was a good way to incorporate Batista because Batista was a guy who was pretty much the muscle for Evolution. That was his role in the group. But even though that was his specified role, you could see that there was untapped potential there with Batista. And now looking back on it, hindsight being 2020, there was clearly a main event run lurking in Batista's future that we weren't really sure if he had at that time. But having Orton incorporate Evolution in constantly beating down Mick Foley was able to protect the legend of Mick Foley. And, you know, kind of present it as he was kind of always being that underdog fighting the uphill battle as he had so often done throughout his career, specifically when he was Mankind trying to fight against the corporation, against The Rock in early 1999, late 1998. So this wasn't foreign waters for Mick Foley. He had been in these types of angles time and time again, but this time against a much younger group aside from Ric Flair. And two guys that had, you know, multiple main event runs in their future. So as they kind of keep pushing along with this angle, they still are angling towards Orton versus Mick Foley as the ultimate payoff, which we would eventually get at Backlash 2003 in a hardcore match for the Intercontinental Championship, a match that, in my opinion, kind of put Randy Orton as on the map as a legit competitor, as I covered with Orton versus Foley about a year ago. And, you know, Mick Foley has a track record of doing this in losing fashion, putting over guys to solidify them as main eventers in these very gruesome type of matches. Like, look at it historically. back in 99 at the Royal Rumble, The Rock and Foley in the infamous I Quit match that The Rock won. Then the very next year at the Royal Rumble, Mick Foley versus Triple H for the WWF Championship in a street fight. Triple H won and kind of cemented him in that role. He goes on to main event WrestleMania 2000 for the first time in his career. Then you have it against Orton in at Backlash 2003. Then going fast forwarding 3 years from that time at WrestleMania 2006, putting over Edge in that capacity. Mick Foley has a very detailed history of putting over younger talent that helps solidify them as main event level champions. And the proof is in the pudding. Those are four examples of four guys who are future, or in Edge's case, already Hall of Famers that kind of got fast tracked to that level because of Mick Foley's work in a losing fashion in championship matches, aside from Edge at big time pay-per-views, you know, Rock and Triple H at Rumble, Edge at Mania. And although Orton and Foley was at Backlash, it was on the backs of a lengthy program and a tag team match at WrestleMania 20. So you knew that that one-on-one match was going to get, we were going to get there with Orton and Foley. But I remember thinking at this time, like, they're involving Batista and Flair an awful lot right now to not have them involved in some capacity. And Flair and Batista, who around this time had just lost the World Tag Team Championships to Booker T and Rob Van Dam, were kind of directionalist. And they were kind of just riding on the coattails and piggybacking off of what Orton was doing at this time with Mick Foley. And you started to think, like, are they going to do something here, like in a tag team capacity? But I'm not going to lie, like, The Rock was not even in my mind. Because you have to understand that we were approaching 10 months now that The Rock had not been a regular in WWE. He was 10 months removed from being a full-time wrestler. He was fully into Hollywood by early 2004. He had come back, I believe, two times since his departure as a full-time competitor. Once on the highlight reel with Jericho, once in December to help Mick Foley against La Resistance. But aside from that, The Rock was really an afterthought, and rightfully so at this point. So as they kept pushing along with the ambushes of Evolution against Randy Orton, you really started to think, like, where are they going to go with this? And eventually, on a Monday Night Raw, 2 weeks out from WrestleMania, we finally got the answer of what would come of this program at WrestleMania. And although Orton offered up a one-on-one match against Foley, Foley had other ideas for the grandest stage of them all.
It sure sounds good on paper. And then, unfortunately, Randy, reality rears its ugly little head. And the sad reality is, there's never going to be a one-on-one as far as Mick Foley and Randy Orton's concerned. Hey, you watch your step, Blair. I'll knock you up. I'm getting damn tired every time. 3-on-1. I'm getting tired of getting my ass kicked. I'm getting tired of hospitals. Getting tired of stretchers. Getting tired of ambulances. Trying to take your offer. I'm going to say, go to hell. I'm going to counteroffer with another match. Evolution. Batista. Randy Orton. And Ric Flair, the greatest of them all, taking on me, Mick Foley, and one partner, of my choice. It's not going to be 3-on-1 anymore, Flair. It'll be 3-on-2. What's it going to be? Mick,
I realize that since you got no friends in the back, that you're going to need a special partner. And I've heard the rumors, and from the sound of it, these people have heard the rumors too. Would you go ahead, Mick? You go ahead, Mick. You go to a payphone. You go to a payphone, you call Mr. Big Shot. Mr. Hollywood, you tell them that you two are on. And then, while you're on the phone with them, Mick, do me a little favor. Tell Mr. Walking Tall that after WrestleMania, neither of you two punk asses are going to be walking after we're done with you.
So, looking back on this or watching this back, apparently I was the only one that was oblivious that there were heavy rumors that The Rock was coming back, because I was under the impression that he was gone for good. But then I look into the crowd and there's signs of Rocky, and I believe this was in Atlanta, Georgia, and then Orton referencing the rumors. So maybe you guys out there who were older than me, I was 9 and a half at this time, could maybe speak to more of this, if there maybe were heavy rumors that The Rock was scheduled to come back for WrestleMania. But even for me, even if The Rock was supposed to come back for WrestleMania, I never once thought that it would be in a handicap tag team match to go with Mick Foley versus Evolution. But lo and behold, that's exactly what The Rock was returning for, but not at WrestleMania. He was coming back that night.
You tell him what I said! Wait. I think I've got a little bit better idea. You see, instead of me going back there and telling him on the phone, why don't you tell him yourself? Why don't you tell him to his face?
What?
Because you see Orton, you see Flair, you see Batista, you're damn right, I said Mick Foley was coming back to Raw. But I never said Mick Foley was coming back to Raw alone. You're so mad.
Oh my God! Oh God, it's The Rock! The Rock! The Rock! The Rock itself! The Rock!
So just like that, the odds not quite evened, as it still was 3-on-2, but The Rock comes back and really sets the stage for what for me was a dream match, because a guy who grew up in the tail end or started watching at the tail end of the Attitude Era, seeing guys like The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin, and then they kind of both went away right at the dawn of the Ruthless Aggression Era, or right on the cusp of it. So for The Rock to come back and set up a match with Randy Orton and Batista, or even a guy like Ric Flair, who he had never had a match with, was pretty damn cool to see. And I've often thought, and Matt and I have covered it on What If, like, imagine had The Rock and The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin, easy enough for me to say, imagine they had stuck around right through the Ruthless Aggression Era, let's say like Triple H or The Undertaker, how many dream matches we would have seen, you know, Austin versus Randy Orton, or The Rock versus Batista, or Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Edge, something along those lines. And although we didn't get to see the vast majority of those matches, obviously The Rock came back and we saw his two-pack against John Cena. This was something really cool, because you saw him come back for a mid-card level match, a tag team contest, to really elevate the likes of Randy Orton and Batista. And I always find it funny how many times they said walking tall in this segment, because it was The Rock's big movie at the time. I believe it was his third movie in a leading role. Before that, it was The Scorpion King, then The Rundown, and then now you had it with Walking Tall, co-starred by Johnny Knoxville from Jackass. But that's neither here nor there. But for The Rock to come back to do this match, and Mick Foley and Randy Orton, I think, touched on it in a Ruthless Aggression era match episode, or so one of a documentary, they spoke about this, and Mick Foley said that people thought that The Rock wouldn't come back unless he thought it was a big deal, and he thought this was a big deal. And that's a pretty cool thing, because this was a big moment for guys like Orton and Batista to share the ring with not only Mick Foley, but a megastar both in the wrestling industry and quickly becoming that in Hollywood, like The Rock. But after the beatdown of Rock and Saw Connection on Evolution, we had The Rock with some lasting words for Evolution as to what they were getting themselves in store for.
Let the Rock make something crystal clear to the three of you. You see, your days of beating and beating and beating and beating on Mick Foley, those days are over. Because you see, the three of you, you guys just didn't agree to any old 3-on-2 matchup. No. You've agreed to the most electrifying and biggest tag team matchup of all time. You've agreed to face the most electrifying tag team of all time, The Rock and Sock Connection.
Oh my.
And above all else, the three of you have agreed to an ass kicking of a lifetime. Of the true hardcore legend, Mick Foley. And the jabroni beating, pie eating, trailblazing, eyebrow raising, got a gift for you just like Santa, an ass whooping at WrestleMania, just like here in Atlanta.
So this really set up a big time match at WrestleMania. It's crazy to think that a match where no titles on the line, a 3-on-2 handicap match, was considered a big time contest. And the following week on Monday Night Raw, the go home episode before WrestleMania, you had The Rock do This Is Your Life for Mick Foley, the opposite of what was done in, I believe, the summer of 1999. When Foley had done that for The Rock, and Evolution had a beatdown on The Rock and Saw Connection as well. And then going into WrestleMania, you know, this was a match that you really didn't know where it was going to go, because you would have to think that The Rock was going to get the victory, right? And Mick Foley and all that. But then on the other side of the coin, you had two up-and-coming guys, especially Randy Orton, on the side of Evolution. And let me tell you, this was a damn good match. I found it entertaining as all hell. I thought the interactions between The Rock and Ric Flair were absolutely hilarious. The Ric Flair attempting to do the people's elbow, but doing the Ric Flair walk from rope to rope, was still to this day one of the funniest things I've ever seen. I thought that The Rock in the ring with guys like Batista and Randy Orton that we never saw again in a wrestling match capacity was a really cool visual. And I think it also helped Mick Foley break his way back in, because I think we were Oh, I don't even know how many years removed from Mick Foley's match. I think he was, his last match, was it WrestleMania 2000 in the Fatal 4-Way match that main evented that show? It could be Mick Foley's last match before he got back in the ring against Evolution at WrestleMania 20. And just to say, even if he did have a match somewhere in between there, it was a 4-year gap before he got back onto the stage of WrestleMania. So that was the first big thing for this match. Secondly, it was the first match ever for Orton and Batista at a WrestleMania. So that was a huge stage for them, especially sharing the ring with the likes of The Rock and Mick Foley and a guy on their side, Ric Flair. It was Ric Flair's first WrestleMania match in 2 years when he fought The Undertaker at WrestleMania 18 in Toronto in a street fight. And then it was The Rock's last WrestleMania match, and last match for that matter, until he would return to the company in 2011. And even at that, he would not have a match until Survivor Series 2011, when he tagged with John Cena against The Miz and R-Truth. So those were three really big deals for separate competitors there. Foley's first WrestleMania match, or first match in over 4 years. You had Orton and Batista's first ever WrestleMania match, and then The Rock's match ever for the final for the succeeding 7.5 years. And ultimately, Randy Orton and Evolution get the win as he hits the RKO on Mick Foley to secure the victory for his first ever WrestleMania victory, along with Batista. And in hindsight, ultimately the right call, because it was the proper booking decision to get his career off the ground and book him as a legitimate contender for the foreseeable future. And look at it, not even 6 months later, he defeats Chris Benoit for the World Heavyweight Championship at SummerSlam. A title victory that ultimately proved to be premature, but it was obvious that he was on a meteoric rise that was really catapulted by his victory over Rock and Saw Connection at WrestleMania 20. And then obviously his program with Mick Foley culminated at the following pay-per-view and Backlash in their one-on-one contest. But getting a victory on the grandest stage of them all, I've said numerous times WrestleMania 20 is in the top three for me ever of all WrestleManias, and against a guy like The Rock. Like, Mick Foley is a big star in his own right, but when you have a victory over The Rock under your belt, that says something. And again, I also thought it was important for Batista to get involved in this match and share the ring with guys like The Rock and Mick Foley, and obviously a guy like Ric Flair, who was his tag team partner. But I think it also meant the world for Batista to be featured on the show and in this tag team match. And I thought that he did a really good job in this match too. One of the more underrated matches on this card that was so star-studded. You know, the return of the Dead Man gimmick, Benoit winning the World Heavyweight Championship, Guerrero winning the WWE Championship, John Cena winning his first ever US Championship against The Big Show to open the show. The infamous Brock versus Goldberg match that was ref'd by Stone Cold Steve Austin. Just a great great card top to bottom, save for the Lesnar-Goldberg match. But it's just crazy to say that this was a contest that was just kind of lost in the shuffle in a match that ultimately proved to be significant on numerous fronts for several of the competitors who were involved in it. But anyway, guys, that's all I got for you today. I hope you enjoyed Evolution versus The Rock and Sock Connection. As always, you can catch me on Twitter at ADeMarco25. You can catch Matt on Twitter at Wrestling_Audio. Or you can email him at RealWWEPodcast@gmail.com. Anyway, guys, take care of yourselves, and I'll talk to you next week.